This episode is brought to you by Peloton, because nothing says Merry Christmas like buying your wife an exercise bike. You are listening to Questionable Material with Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. This episode, news you missed, Jack's auditions, wife court, and Brian the biographer.
Turn down the music in your head so we can start the show.
I just turned it down.
Oh,
it
good.
Just stopped. You didn't hear anything for that whole intro?
No.
So that was just me? That was all me?
Yeah, you were just having a delusion.
Oh, boy. That's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying I hear things?
Yeah. Like a ringing in your ear.
Yeah, I do.
Tinnitus update.
It's still there.
Oh.
Yeah, stop.
And that's the end of Tinnitus Update. Let me clap.
It's still, oh, jeez. No.
To say I'm no, so no, happy no, no, we're no, done no, with this
no,
segment.
No. Oh, my God. It's so weird. Like the moment somebody brings it up, it comes front and center.
Yeah.
It's like an Achilles heel now.
Yeah.
My kids know they can just go, "Mee," and I'm like, "Oh, stop."
I love how messed up your kids are.
Yeah, that's brutal.
No wonder they're into Germans. So, Brian, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was terrible, Jack.
Oh, no. Why? What happened?
Because I made a lot of people sad.
Oh, yeah. Podcast listeners?
No, not yet.
No? Okay, good.
That's
good.
Coming up in the next 30-something minutes.
Oh, awesome. What about people who've read your book?
I haven't talked to the three of them, but I don't know if they've been upset about my book.
Then it can only be your family.
No, it wasn't the family. It wasn't what? My family.
I mean, those are the three classic groupings of people who you constantly make unhappy. Who did you make unhappy?
A group of turkeys.
Why?
Because I cooked their mommy.
What?
In the big green egg.
In your big grill?
I smoked her for 3 hours, Jack.
Oh, man.
They were very sad.
And so you brought the turkey's family to watch the execution?
I don't know why I did that. That's such a weird impulse.
It is a weird impulse. You should act against that impulse.
You think it's bad enough you're gonna eat a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
do you have to drag the whole family in there and create a spectacle out of it?
So what sort of scenario?
Poor turkeys, gobble, gobble, gobble. I don't know what that means. Gobble, gobble, gobble. And I'm just here I am with my axe and this voluptuous heritage turkey.
What do you mean voluptuous?
It's big breasts, Jack.
Mm. Were they natural breasts?
They were, that's all. It was a heritage turkey. It was the same kind of turkey that the pilgrims ate.
Oh.
Because the turkeys now have been genetically modified
mm-hmm.
so that they're like giant things that are 99 cents a pound and you freeze them.
Uh-huh.
And taste like styrofoam.
So it's sort of like you bought the Kate Upton of turkeys instead of like the Kardashian of turkeys.
I don't know who Kate Upton is.
Oh, that's right. I'm doing a podcast with someone with zero pop culture reference points.
Kate Upton.
She's a natural beauty.
Natural beauty?
But an actual, she's super beautiful.
Like Kate Moss? I know that name.
So your last point of cultural reference was 1988.
Kate Upton, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know Upton Sinclair.
Oh, good God. You should, all right, let me do you a favor.
Yes.
Google Kate Upton.
Right now?
And don't, well, sure, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Upton girl. There's been a lot of Billy Joel theme in there. Oh, she's pretty, isn't she? is she a movie star or just an actress? Or a model?
She's like, yeah, she's a model.
Obesity targets Kate Upton. Why would they target her? We want to make you big. Like, why, what does that even mean?
Obesity targets her?
Yeah. Oh, Thinspo blog targets Kate Upton, a fat, squishy brick. What is Thinspo blog? Oh, that's 7 years old.
Mm.
Oh,
like my daughter.
She's not a squishy brick. So Kate Upton, she's a recent model.
Yes. She still looks like that.
It's too bad she can't do the Victoria's Secret fashion show since they canceled it.
That's right. Because in America, it's best to pretend that pretty people aren't pretty and then we won't look at them.
Or that everybody's pretty. Everybody has to be pretty.
That's right.
And if everybody can't be pretty, nobody can be pretty.
We're all equally beautiful on the outside.
Right.
So can you just walk me through this whole turkey? The reason we got into famous people and Kate Upton is because I just want to understand again your process for bringing a turkey's family in to watch the execution cooking of, like, I don't understand why you would do that.
Yeah, I don't, why would you loop in this whole family of turkeys into this, 3 hour ordeal?
So loop them in. So, I mean, do you send them like Evites?
I invited them.
Okay. And they all came.
They all came.
And so they, unaware
that their mother had been captured.
And, you know, they're all sitting there excitedly, and I kind of had them penned in near the garden. and then I stroll out with the mother, and they're like, hooray!
They thought it's surprised, because kind of she'd been probably missing for a little while.
And then, of course, you know, the axe comes out, the screaming, the and then the gobbling, which I guess is a, gobble means, it's a-
means so many multi, things.
It's like shalom.
Like, or
it's
smurf. Like
mahalo, yeah, mm-hmm. It's, or smurf. gobble, 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 gobble. What's in the gobble?
Explain to me the thought process of why you do this.
I don't know, Jack. I don't think it through. It just seemed like a thing that I should do. Just bring the whole family of turkeys there to witness the brutal murder and cooking and then consumption of their beloved turkey matriarch. I don't know why I did it. I don't feel good about it. Mm-hmm. I know I'm wrong. I know one of our guests at Thanksgiving is a very proud vegan, mm-hmm. and had a lot of issues with it.
Oh yeah.
And it was one of these things where she was so upset about it. I kept trying to steer her to politics. Oh, no. Like, let's just talk politics.
Right.
You seem really upset about the turkey.
Yeah, I bet. So you encourage her, like, let's take aside Trump versus like every AOC.
Yeah. Every magazine, mm-hmm. you know, was just like, don't talk politics at the holiday table, yep. blah, blah. And I was just like, let's get away from the turkey murder, mm-hmm. and spectacle that I just put on.
Sure.
And that these turkeys outside are clearly traumatized about.
You are a showman.
I am. I like to entertain and I like to torture.
go ahead, please.
Well, you know, and so I tried to steer her towards some kind of political discussion. Mm-hmm.
How'd that go?
So one of our friends who's big into Bloomberg, mm-hmm. actually, because mm-hmm. she thinks the whole lineup of Democrats is pretty pathetic. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's hard to disagree.
Sure.
I mean, that's why Bloomberg actually entered the race.
That's right.
And we, you know, we all just talked about various things. What's interesting is two of them, having grown up in communism, mm-hmm. had some great, you know, growing up in communism stories.
Sure.
Like the exoticness of a banana.
Oh.
Okay. So oranges were for Christmas.
Right. So this is your foreign wife and her foreign friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who both grew up in Poland, communistic yep. Poland. Mm-hmm. Oranges were a Christmas thing. Mm-hmm. If you might be able to get one around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. Bananas mm-hmm. were so rare and exotic that her mother would cut them up into four pieces for the four kids.
Wow.
One banana, four pieces. And same with a lot of candy bars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, no wonder they fought with the Germans.
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
Nope.
No, I'm just talking about her ancestors.
No, actually her grandfather was a partisan.
Oh.
And I have his bandolier hanging in my room.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his shotgun bandolier.
Oh, cool.
He fought the Nazis.
Sure. That's definitely the story that you tell the kids. So what happens with the turkeys who you brought, the turkey family, the matriarchless turkey family that you brought? What happened to them?
They have PPTSD, which is poultry post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of us have that.
And of course, now I feel obligated to pay for their counseling.
Oh,
and to kind of, you know,
man,
help them get through mm-hmm. what I did to them.
Yeah.
For the holiday.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've got to make good and be a good person and correct the wrong.
Yeah. Good for you.
Of murdering and eating their mommy.
Yep.
And front of them after brining her for 14 hours.
What are you going to have for a Christmas dinner?
The patriarch. Jack, what did you do for Black Friday?
You got to understand, Brian, that I am ultra woke. So to me, every Friday is Black Friday.
Hmm.
So this Black Friday, I sat the kids down and for about 7 hours, I read them from Arthur Ashe's biography.
Really? For mm-hmm. Black Friday? Mm-hmm. Did you not realize that it has nothing to do with race, Black Friday?
No, I didn't until you and I were preparing for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was a real, real slap in the face.
Wow. So my friend Brad, he's a director.
Mm-hmm.
He directs movies, Jack.
Ooh, like what?
He's very successful.
Name a movie that he directed.
One of his first was called The Machinist.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, have you ever seen it? Super creepy.
I usually don't do creepy movies.
He does a lot of dark stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's branching out.
Oh.
And I saw some of the films he's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do you know anybody good for these roles? Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I was looking at these roles. I'm like, oh my God, Jack would be perfect for this.
Oh, this is great.
Yes. And he said, okay, great. You know, why don't you audition them on your podcast?
Whoa.
And I will give a listen. He goes, but it's all riding on the performance, you know, during the podcast.
Okay.
Like there's no second chances.
Okay.
You muck it up, you go off character or anything like that. You just don't have a chance.
Okay.
Okay.
So how do I audition? Do I just, do I do a monologue or something?
No, I got the scripts right here.
Oh, you have sides.
I have sides. That's what they call it. You're right. That's the industry lingo, everybody. Sides. So this film that Brad's working on, it's called Charlie Company.
Okay.
Okay. It's a military, it's a World War II themed film.
That's great.
I was reading the role and it's this officer, Army Captain Sean Johnson.
Okay.
Big tough guy, tough as nails, tough, mm-hmm. like strong, just a man, right? And I was like, oh my God, Jack.
Oh, wow.
Totally right for that.
Thank you.
So I'm going to give you the script.
Okay.
Right? So we'll have to read it cold. That's one of the things
I've never
really
read
want.
This. Okay, yep.
You've
okay.
never read. All right. So Charlie Company, this scene that we're auditioning, so it's an interior prison cell.
That means inside.
Inside is interior. Correct. All right. So remember, it's really, really important to stay in character.
Okay.
Okay. And you're like this tough guy, no BS.
Super
right?
macho. Got it.
Gestapo officer Hans Bosch stands over a bloodied and battered army captain, Sean Johnson. That's you.
Okay.
Who
okay.
is tied to a chair. A single light bulb hangs over his head.
I already told your Gestapo friends my name, rank, and serial number. You damn Nazis won't get anything else out of me.
We will see about that, Captain Johnson. I'm pretty sure you will tell me everything I want to hear.
Name, rank, and serial number. That's all you get, Fritz.
I see. Well, perhaps I can change your mind with this piece of poo-poo.
You're lucky my hands are tied. Otherwise
what? You would seize the poo-poo from my Aryan hands and throw the poo-poo at me?
That'd be a start. I'd definitely get you back for tying me to a chair and beating me.
Yes. Well, unfortunately for you, you are tied up and I am holding the poo-poo. And as the saying goes, Captain, the one with the poo-poo
calls the shots. Yes, I know that saying well. It's a very common saying. My grandmother Flossie said it to me all the time. But have you Nazis ever heard of the Geneva Convention?
You might not have noticed, Captain, but we don't exactly play by the rules. You have your Geneva Convention. I have my poo-poo.
Man, you freaking Nazis are obsessed with
poo-poo. I know. But that is to be expected when your leader writes a book called Mein Kampf. Do you know what Mein Kampf means, Captain?
Yes, my struggle.
Yes, my struggle to make a big poo-poo.
You're on the wrong side of history, Fritz.
And scene, Jack, I'm really sorry. I don't think you're going to get that role.
Why?
Because you started laughing in the middle of it. You just can't be doing that. Brad was very, very specifically, he said, they got to stay in character.
But I didn't know. I thought it'd be more traditional dialogue where German didn't talk about poo-poo.
This is the way Brad likes to cast movies.
Did he write this?
No, he didn't write this.
This feels like a Lawrence Kasdan.
This was written by Lawrence Kasdan or somebody. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm really sorry, but I feel like you kind of lost character in that. And there's a good chance he's not going to give you that role, but there are more.
It's
more
frustrating
chances.
Because I wish people could see the sides that are in my hand right now, because all my lines are on the page, but all of your lines are blacked out. So I don't know what's going to be said to me.
That's the whole point is really because Brad likes to,
he's testing.
He likes to test the actor.
Okay.
He wants to surprise the actor.
Okay. I'm in it.
All right. We've got another one. We've got a chance to do it.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's called Another Avengers 2. And I guess it's by Marvel.
Yeah.
Is that who makes Avengers?
No, very good.
Oh, good for me. I didn't say DC, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is another Avengers 2.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I saw this role, Joe Bias.
Uh-huh.
And it was like big strapping dude. And he was like kind of a superhero-y guy. Mm-hmm. And I saw that. I'm like, oh, please allow me to have Jack audition for this.
Okay.
And so this is your big chance to be in an Avengers film.
This could pay my bills for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. You'd be Residual City.
Okay.
All right. Exterior, standing atop a mountain.
Atop means on top of.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Joe Bias, that would be you, mm-hmm. in a battle suit, mm-hmm. uses binoculars to survey the vast plains below. The camera pans to reveal Brindisi, a wise old man with a banana hat.
Incredible. What city is that?
That, Joe Bias, is the city of Mapungo, the most advanced city
in Africa?
In the entire world, Joe Bias. Mapungo has the most advanced technology. Science, medicine, mathematics, arts, spelling bees, you name it.
Wow. I can't believe I've never heard of it before.
And 100% of Mapungo's children live with both parents.
Wow. They are superior to us in every way. So what do you need me for?
You will infiltrate Mapungo and steal the Infinity Laser, which we will use to defeat the evil Dr. Timmy.
That's suicide. Do you really think we can defeat Dr.
Timmy? We have no choice. If Dr. Timmy gets to the Infinity Laser first, half of all humanity will...
disappear?
Worse. Their faces will turn to bums.
Wow, that's despicable.
Imagine Tobias coming home to your beautiful wife. She opens the door and her face is a bum.
Yeah, that'd be hard to swallow.
Literally. And you have 2 6-year-old kids, Lily and Emily. Lily is adorable, rosy cheeks and a smile that melts your heart. Mm-hmm. But Emily's face is a bum. And when she talks, it smells like farts.
I get it.
It would be impossible to love Emily. We need the Infinity Laser.
Okay, how do I sneak into the city without being noticed?
We're going to disguise you as the Prime Minister of Canada.
Prime Minister, isn't he?
Whiter than a polar bear during Christmas? Yes, but not when he's in blackface.
Wow, you think of everything.
Oh, you were doing so good. And then I feel like you know, there were a couple of hiccups throughout, but, and then you broke out at the end, you laughed a little bit. And I really think Brad's going to hold that against you.
Well, I didn't mean to, I just didn't, that's such a terrible choice. Like I wouldn't want to be in that movie if the blackface is not okay.
What a shame.
People got to know that by now.
The Prime Minister of Canada doesn't. Oh, I was really rooting for you there.
I felt that. Yeah. Thank you. Shoot. Right.
Okay, well, listen, we have...
That's a very strange script.
Yeah, you know, they're greenlighting everything these days.
Sure.
All right. Shoot. I've got another one. This Ed Jameson character, who's just he's like an iron worker. I mean, just like a real rugged dude.
Yeah.
And I'm reading that, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Jack. That's
the guy who like swings like a hammer to forge steel. Yeah,
he's got the union helmet on, yeah, and all the stickers. Okay, so this is the movie called The Dr. Bennigan Chronicles.
Okay.
It's the interior of a doctor's office.
So a doctor's office is where you see a doctor.
That's right. Good. I'm glad you explained that. Dr. Bennigan sits at a desk. Across from him sits Ed Jameson. That would be you.
Okay.
Who looks resigned to his fate. The doctor looks up from his charts.
Give it to me straight, Doc. I'm a big boy.
Ed, there's no easy way to say this. We looked at the MRI and it's not good.
Just be straight with me, Doc. I'm a steel worker. Have been all my life. Look at my tattoos.
Ed, you have a fizzling whizzlewicker.
Sorry, a what?
A fizzling whizzlewicker. I know it sounds harmless, but it's not.
I'm sorry.
Fizzling whizzlewicker. It's wrapped around your flobbity bop and can't be removed because it would destroy your pizzling wobbly dizzle.
Doctor, I can't believe I'm hearing this.
I know. It sounds like Dr. Seuss made this stuff up.
You mean Dr. Seuss, rhymes with Joyce.
What we can do is give you medication to ease the pain of the fizzling whizzlewicker constricting your flobbity bop. The downside is your McDizzly Hizzlemaker will shrink and your Fribrizzling Dibbledorf will probably sag.
Oh, God.
You'll experience dizziness and nausea and you won't be able to maintain an election.
I think you mean erection.
No, election. No one will vote for a guy with a fizzling whizzlewicker wrapped around his flobbity bop.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to win.
That's my home slice.
Goodbye, Doc.
Oh, damn.
Jesus, I
felt like you had that role.
That felt like I was set up to fail. Now, why would the doctor all of a sudden say home slice?
You know, I don't know these things. I'm not the writer. I didn't write this script. Oh, that's
home
a
home slice?
That's a bummer. You were so close.
I felt it really weird. You know, maybe it's, you know, I went to school for TV. I didn't go to medical school. Some of that didn't make sense to me.
All right. Well, you've got one more chance. There's one more chance to get a lead role in a new film that Brad's directing called Eternal Love.
Ooh.
Interior restaurant.
Okay. Well, I don't know what any of that means.
Interior is the inside. Yep. And a restaurant is a place where people go to eat and pay money.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sorry.
Jack and Brenda. So Jack would be the handsome man. That's why I thought of you. Mm-hmm. And Brenda are in the middle of dinner at a very chic restaurant. They're holding hands.
Brenda, I have to say in the year we've been together, I feel like the luckiest man alive. I'd like to propose a toast to us.
To us.
Someone had told me I'd meet a woman as smart, beautiful and awesome as you. I'd have laughed in their face.
Well, I feel like the luckiest girl in the world, to be honest.
Oh, damn. All right. Just so you know where I'm going with this, I don't want to see anyone else. I don't want to spend time with anyone else. I just want to spend time with you, Brenda.
Oh, Jack, you're going to make me cry like a little girl. You're going to ruin my mascara.
And who knows? It's not crazy to think that someday you and I could finally settle down and have a family.
Yes, I can have babies. I am a woman and I can have babies.
Oh, so I'm just going to say it. I love you, Brenda Fitzgibbons. I love you more than anything.
I love you too, Jack. Stand up and give me a hug.
What's that lump?
You know, I don't have to say it, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't do good on that one.
You did not do well in that audition.
No, I know. I felt like some of my... Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah.
I know that.
That's a shame.
It's embarrassing to kind of eat it on my own podcast.
You know, that's just the way he likes to cast. And that's a shame because it just seemed like such a good role for you. I will tell him that I'll let him listen.
Well, yeah, let him listen because maybe he'll hear something in it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but at least don't include this in the podcast. Like, just send him this audio file, but don't put this in the show.
This, what we just did?
Yeah.
Consider it not in the podcast.
Thank you very much. You didn't push, you just lifted your finger as if you were going to push a button, but you didn't.
I did not.
Okay, but it's not going to be the podcast.
No, it's a different button I was not about to press.
Okay. Okay, thank
you. Consider it not done.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Fingers crossed.
So, Brian.
Yes, Jack.
I wanted to talk to you about something.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so not a lot of people know this about you, but you are such a renowned, perhaps the most renowned biographer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You've written so many biographies about... all sorts of public figures. Mm-hmm. And I've always admired that about you. You're a great writer. I mean, not your fiction is terrible, but your biography work is really, really great.
Thank you.
I mean, you've written, how many biographies do you think you've written?
Oh, I stopped keeping track a long time ago.
Well, I love that you churn them out. A lot of people take, you know, years to research, but not you. You really just, you get first piece of rumor you have, you write that book.
I feel like that you just want to get that information out.
Yeah.
Why keep it hidden when you can just hear it in a bar, overhear it at the gas station and get it written down and published?
It's the equivalent of saying first on an internet chain.
Right.
Yeah. And that's you as a biographer.
I am.
So I found a bunch of your biographies. And I was wondering if you could tell me some little known facts about some of the people you've written about.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So the first one was Steve Jobs, you know, by Brian Sack, of course. The Steve Jobs biography. What are some fun little known facts about Steve Jobs that you learned in your research of the founder of Apple?
Yeah, a lot of things. He could not pronounce the letter P.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so how would he say the name of his company?
Al.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That was like, you know, that's why he never really said it. If you noticed in any of his presentations, he would never say Apple because he couldn't say Apple. He would say this company I work for.
No kidding.
Yeah. This company I work for is new product, the iPhone.
Okay. But he could say, you could do fuh.
If it sounds like a fuh, no problem.
Okay.
It's the hard P. Could not do.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
So how would he
say? That's why he couldn't say please.
Oh, so he would appear off-putting and rude.
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting. And so how would he say potpourri pepperoni pizza?
Give me some of that Little Caesar's goodness.
Oh, so he would just avoid it entirely.
He would not deal with flavor or anything. He just usually just the company name.
Wow. That is a really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, that's why I write these biographies.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
And you found out that he actually didn't die in the way that people thought, not from pancreatic cancer.
Right.
But from something else. what actually got him?
He, and this is a great irony, is he was killed by an android. And they knew... Apple knew if they had said our leader was killed by an android, android being a Google product,
right?
That sends a bad message to shareholders.
Yeah, of course.
So they made it seem as though he had pancreatic cancer. When in fact, he had been brutally murdered by an android.
Wow, Brian, that's great research, by the way.
Well, that's what I love to do. I love to dig up information.
Well, that's great. And so another one of the biographies that I found in your place was, and finally, I'm glad someone finally is covering this guy, Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill.
Finally, a biography on Churchill. So I was wondering if you could just let me know some little known facts about Churchill.
Well, Winston and FDR, they got along and they loved to play cards.
Oh.
And actually, Winston won FDR's legs in a bridge game.
That's, no.
It's not known. They went with the whole polio thing.
Right, to keep, otherwise America might, the American citizenry wouldn't want to fight alongside. Yeah,
give us our president's legs back.
Right.
Damn it.
God, FDR was a hero, man. Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, he honored his bets to his credit. He was somebody, a man of his word, and he honored his bets and he bet his legs. Winston won and Winston took them back to England. He kept them in a, what he called the leg cupboard, which was just a cupboard that had legs in it.
Okay. Yeah. That's so British to call it that.
Yes. They call a toilet a water closet. Uh-huh. Yet they call a cupboard filled with legs a leg cupboard. You'd think they'd come up with something more clever.
Well, they invented the language. They can do what they want with it.
It's their thing.
Really is. Wow. That's so interesting.
Yep.
Man.
So many facts out there that people don't know.
There really are. And speaking of which, you said you found a plethora of things about Prince.
Yes.
What was one of the little known facts that you found out about Prince that you want to share with our listeners?
He was actually cloned from a smudge.
Really?
Yeah.
A smudge of what?
I don't know. They have no idea. This scientist was at a telephone booth and there was a smudge. This was back in the day when they had telephone booths.
Uh-huh.
And there was a smudge on the glass of the telephone booth.
Uh-huh.
Being a scientist, he grabbed a little bit of it.
Uh-huh.
He put it in a Petri dish, which he always carried with him.
Yep.
He brought it back to the lab. He fed it some cells and protein.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, this little musician pops out of the Petri dish.
Uh-huh.
Scared the crap out of the doctor, the scientist.
Wow, this explains so much.
Yeah. The scientist was like, what are you doing? And he's just, I've got to be me. And then he started playing music.
Yeah, like some sexy time music.
Yeah.
I assume Prince just appeared completely nude.
He did. He appeared completely nude, but he shed his skin on a regular basis, every 14 to 18 minutes.
Oh my, that's really...
He would shed skin.
I remember he would have a lot of costume changes in his concerts.
Yes. Well, a lot of that was about jumping backstage, taking off his costume, getting rid of the skin that he had shed during the performance, and then putting the new costume on and then jumping back out on stage.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was a bully.
Prince was a bully?
Yeah.
In what way?
He bullied pigeons and doves. And When Doves Cry is actually based on making birds sad.
So like it was more of a celebration for him, like for his anthem, a personal anthem.
It sounds like it's different. It sounds like some kind of a romantic ballad or something, but it was just about him gloating about the fact that he was really mean to pigeons and doves.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Brian.
There's so much stuff out there.
There really is. Well, then you must have so much stuff on Jimmy Carter because you wrote the biography on Jimmy Carter.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're really great. And the first person on this list who's still living.
Yeah, that's right.
Although by the time we edit this podcast, I mean,
we got to hurry.
So what are some little known facts about Jimmy Carter that you learn as his biographer?
President Jimmy Carter is very involved with Habitat for Humanity.
I would hope so. It's his charity, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And he builds houses all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
What people don't know is that all those houses, on the day he dies, will burst into flames.
What?
He calls it Jimmy's Pact.
That's messed up.
It's a little weird.
It is.
Other than that, he seems like a nice guy.
It feels like we could lose a lot of properties throughout the whole country.
Not to mention lives for people who aren't ready for their house to spontaneously burst into flames.
Right, especially when you don't know when he's going to just drop.
You don't know, but...
He's 95.
I can tell you this.
Okay.
The minute you hear the president has passed, you get the hell out of your house and you go stand in the road.
That makes a lot of sense. So you would recommend families having Jimmy Carter death drills?
Yes. Jimmy Carter death drills should be mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, you practice with your family.
Okay.
It's the same as getting ready for like any kind of terrorist attack or something.
Mm-hmm.
You gather the kids, you come into the room, you go, President Carter has passed. Go, go, go. You grab your go bag, you get out of the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really glad we covered that. That's.
Yeah. I'm really glad you mentioned that.
Very, very, very good, Brian.
Thank you.
Really interesting.
I like to write biographies.
You really do. And I'll give you one more. You said, you of course wrote the biography. You were first to market with this.
Yeah.
With the Jesse Smollett biography.
Yes, Jussie Smollett.
Yeah.
Love Jussie Smollett.
I know you do. I know.
Great.
Yeah. And you always have. To be fair, you were sort of on.
Huge fan. I've been with him since, Empire. Mm-hmm. Oh, whatever good. He did before Empire.
Yeah. You'd think you'd know.
And the things that biography. Happened before that.
Oh, yeah.
Love Jussie Smollett.
Oh, that's cool. So what are some little known facts about innocent until proven guilty Jussie Smollett?
What are some little known facts? Well, so Jussie Smollett, he's known for acting, of course.
Of course.
He's known for fabricating a hate crime.
Of course.
And getting tremendous publicity and not really backing down from it.
Yep.
And really trying to fight the reality that he's a charlatan on every level.
Yep.
But he's not just a fabricator of lies.
Yep.
He's a fabricator of the mouse hammer.
What? What's the mouse hammer?
Well, the mouse hammer is a hammer that's used by mice.
Oh, by mice.
By mice. Why would a mouse need a hammer, you ask? Well, mice like to build. We don't know this because we're busy chasing them around and killing them with traps and being scared of them. But if you ever go into a mice den, which is what they're called.
Okay. What are they called in England?
Squeak mounds.
Okay. So if you ever go into a squeak mound.
Squeak mound. Mm-hmm. You would see, beautiful carpentry.
Oh.
A lot of detailed finished carpentry, toe molding, baseboards, like really lovely.
Wow.
We just think, they live in this little Tom and Jerry kind of hole in your wall type thing. They are artisans. But a lot of the mouse hammer manufacturers didn't make it through 2008 when the economy tanked.
Oh,
they closed. Jussie Smollett saw an opportunity there to fabricate mouse hammers. And so he started what is one of the largest mouse hammer companies in the country.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And you said there's a really interesting link between his alleged assault and mouse hammers.
Yeah. Originally he tried to claim he was attacked by by white supremacists wielding mouse hammers because he thought
it would get publicity,
for his mouse hammer business. But mouse hammers are obviously very small.
Right.
Did very little damage to Jussie's toe.
So he quickly changed his story.
He changed his story and hired a couple Nigerian guys to rough him up.
Sure. A couple of white supremacist Nigerians.
Right. With MAGA hats to rough him up.
And you discovered that Jussie Smollett actually faked his homosexuality for almost 20 years just to be a victim of a fake crime. Is that right?
He's married with four children.
Really?
Yeah.
To a woman?
Yep. He married a woman. They have four gorgeous children.
What are his kids' names?
Hoax. Fake. Pretend. And Gulf of Tonkin incident.
God, this guy's a strange nut.
He's a weird person.
I mean, if you're in the mouse hammer game. Well, Brian, great work on all these biographies.
Please buy them on Amazon.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody go on to Amazon right now and search Brian Sack and Jussie Smollett and any of the other.
I would love to see that trending.
Well, there you go. Good job, Brian.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Jack.
Now you're just making me mad. You did a good job, and now I want to take it away from you.
So you know and I know that there's so much news going on that's all focused on Trump that things slip through the cracks. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going on. I look for these news items so I can tell you and everybody else what's going on outside of the Trump world.
Great.
Because we need to know.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Now that you say it, there are so many things that I don't know what's going on in other parts of the world. So go ahead, Brian.
You don't, Jack. I'm telling you. I just told you.
Stop yelling at me.
Sorry. Are you ready for some news?
Yes.
All right, Jack. Jack, you're married.
Yes.
Do you have a wedding ring?
I'm wearing one right now.
Oh, me too.
Oh.
Well, did you buy an engagement ring for your lady?
I did.
Oh. Well, Jack, a Kentucky man spent an unthinkable sum of money on an absolutely necessary engagement ring last Wednesday in the hopes that his longtime girlfriend, Karen Wilford, will see the expensive gesture as a significant step in their relationship and not a harbinger of future financial calamity. Paducah native Daryl Simmons, 31, says that he spent 2 months of his salary on the diamond ring just as recommended by the people who sell diamond rings. When asked if he had considered getting a second opinion on the purchase, he told the Times no, saying that he felt strongly that people who sell diamond rings probably know best what to charge for them. He then hopped into a 2019 Kia Sorento, for which he paid full sticker price because that's what the dealer said it cost. In a follow-up with the Times, Simon said that his girlfriend said yes and that they hoped to begin their life together with a remarkably expensive wedding worth 10 months of his salary.
Ooh, that seems like he's making a lot of bad choices.
You know, that's how it begins.
It is. Well, good luck to that happy young couple.
Yes, sir. So members of Extinction Rebellion, a climate activist group, said that they were absolutely gobsmacked that a recent protest didn't garner the kind of enthusiastic support they had anticipated that it would. Now, Marquise Chisholm, a spokesman for the group, said that they were certain that blocking Fifth Avenue during rush hour would have helped countless thousands of people, quote, see the light of the climate threat, end quote, and join Extinction Rebellion's cause. Margarita Gonzalez, a mother of three and one of the motorists stuck in the chaos, said that while she fully appreciates that there are climate issues that need to be addressed sooner than later, she missed her f***ing flight to Puerto Rico to see her family, and these entitled college can go f*** themselves, self-absorbed privileged who f***ed up her family reunion, not to mention everyone else's plans that evening. The f***ing Chisholm said the blowback has forced the group to reconsider an upcoming plan to keep elderly people from getting dialysis.
Wow.
Really, really upset Margarita.
Yeah, she's, what's a salty.
She did not mince words.
No, man alive.
But you know, when you block traffic for people, I guess you're going to rub some people the wrong way.
Well, you'd think people would look ahead and think that's not the best way to get people to your side.
You never know, Jack.
You never do.
Just never know. Maybe I'm going to jump over there and crap on your keyboard and get you to support animal rights. A famous mommy blogger said that she could definitely see the irony in the fact that she is a truly horrible mother. Amelia von Hilsberg, editor of the popular mommy blog Mamapalooza, said that the nature of full-time mommy blogging was such that the entirety of her parenting had been outsourced to various underpaid third parties. According to von Hilsberg, while carefully crafting posts on how to be the world's most perfect mommy, she was overcompensating for grossly neglecting the emotional and spiritual needs of her twins, Ruby and Sapphire, by spoiling the duo and letting them get away with everything without consequences. The 49-year-old single mom said that now that her children are 13, she realized she has created, quote, perfect monsters, end quote, destined to become unlovable trophy hellions for some soulless hedge fund manager like their dad. Von Hilsberg also admitted Ruby and Sapphire were named for reasons that had more to do with website hits than practicality. The unusual candor came after three hits of Xanax and a half bottle of Pinot Grigio.
Wow, that's a mommy blogger's lunch.
That was all the news you missed, Jack.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for doing the work and filtering out the stories.
Filtering out the stories. Wow. Jack.
Yes.
Do you have any experience with legal matters?
A little bit. I just sued my old contractor and won.
Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you. So I know, basically, I know a lot about, I'm one of our country's leading judiciary experts.
Well, I have a proposal for you, Jack.
Okay.
For a new segment I'd call Wife Court.
Oh my gosh, Brian, that sounds great. What's Wife Court?
I don't know, but this is the theme music.
You are listening for Wife Court with one host, Jack Helmut, as the judge.
That's really good theme music. It makes me think we should have a segment called Wife Court.
Wife Court, Jack. So here's the story.
Okay.
I'm the defendant and my wife is the plaintiff. So Jack, I would like you to preside over this case.
Okay, Brian, tell me the facts of the case.
The fact of the case, Jack, is my wife is annoyed with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think she should be annoyed with me because I think it's her fault.
Okay, and I'm going to decide whose fault this really is.
That's right, Judge Jack.
Okay, I'm ready to preside. And joining us today is the lovely Ava Sack. Hello, Ava.
Hi.
So, Brian, I would like to hear the facts of the case.
Yes.
From your wife's perspective. So, does she know what this case is about?
Yeah. Can I present the evidence?
Please.
All right. Here's the evidence. I have a text. All right. And a text exchange. So here's the background. The wife is coming back from out of town. She's driving with her friend. She's being dropped off somewhere. I get a message. The message is, can you help with the bags? My response, yeah, when? Her response, in 5 to 10? I answer, okay, let me know. And then, can you meet on 48/2? Then she goes, I'm on 48th. So I walk.
Let me pause. Do you dispute any of these facts so far?
No.
So I walk with the sons to 48th and I don't see her. So I start walking down 48th. I text, where? And I text again, where? No answer. And then I call and I say, where are you? And she says, I told you. I said, can you just answer me? I told you. I said, I don't know where you are. I'm on 48th. She says, I'm on the corner. So I say, you didn't say the corner. I'm on 48th. So I walk and she's at the corner of 48th and 2nd. On 2nd, by the way, she's not on 48th. And she's mad with me because I was walking down 48th looking for her.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Now for the plaintiff's side of the story, what say you?
It's not about that. It's about the tone of your voice.
See what I'm talking about? This is what I'm up against.
It's just the way you talk to me. Thank you. Bam.
The tone of your voice in a text?
No, when I called.
Over the phone.
Oh. Yeah, but when I said...
He barks.
No, okay.
But he barks. He hasn't seen me in one day, over 24 hours. And he starts to come like, why are you?
Your Honor?
No, you've had your chance to speak. Yes, you have, sir, a whole podcast worth.
Yes, sir.
I would like to continue to speak to the wife.
Yes, Your Honor.
In wife court.
Yes, sir.
Now, can you give us an example of some of the things he said to you and in the tone he used?
No. It's barking.
Like what? Barking.
It's just angry without a reason. He could just say, hey, where are you? First of all, I wasn't on my phone. I was on my watch.
Your Honor?
So I couldn't hear. Second, I was unloading the bags that he was supposed to unload. So mm-hmm. I have 7 bags on one arm. That's 7 on the... And he wants me to have a conversation.
These are lies, by the way. She did not have 7 bags.
Now, Brian, what say you to your tone, speaking to your wife in that manner, especially after you've not seen your love in over a day?
Your Honor, the tone came from when I called and I said, where are you? I don't see you. And she said, I told you. Instead of saying, I'm on the corner of mm-hmm. such and such, and she said, I told you. Mm-hmm. As in, go figure it out yourself. Meanwhile, I'm in the middle of the street, walking down this block looking for the car with 2 children who are whining because it's cold out and snowing.
And so this... Because you're a little chilly, you think that gives you a reason to speak to a woman that way?
It was more, first, I wouldn't say it's that way. I mean, I was just like, where are you?
Because temperatures had dropped to the 31 degrees. So then it's time to just rip your wife a new one. Is that right?
Your Honor, I don't believe I ripped my wife a new one.
How would you categorize a wife?
Exactly as you described. Also, I might add, children were not necessary, dragging the whiny children who are...
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
Point.
Plus, once again, I was talking to my watch as I was holding 7 bags in my arm.
Your Honor, there were not 7 bags.
What were the contents of these bags?
Oh, I was bringing food.
There was a bag of trash and a tote bag.
24 hours for my babies and for my dear, dear husband.
So you're supplying food... So you're sort of doing the man's job, not only of carrying the bags, but of providing for your family. You're providing the food, literally. Not only are you going to prepare said food, but you're providing it for your family. Is this true?
Very, very true.
Can I declare a mistrial?
No, you can't. This is your idea for a segment, and we're getting to the bottom of this. Okay, so so your wife has done all of this work for you.
I would frame my case as I was willing to help my wife carry bags. I went looking for her. Where she said she would be. She was not there when I called. I received some amount of attitude.
What?
And I responded in kind.
So you brought children who are currently in school out into cold weather to help you do your husband job. Is
they
that had, right?
They were,
is that right?
I actually ran.
Yes or no?
I ran into them.
Is that yes or no? Just answer. You brought the children during cold and flu season the day before school out to carry bags in the cold for your wife. And so you could lollygag or be on your cell phone. Yes or no?
No.
Why did you bring your children then?
They were already outside.
And so your children can't get into an apartment building on their own?
They could, but I said your mom is
then arriving. Why did you bring, then answer the question. Why did you bring them?
Because they were there. They showed up.
Oh, because they were there.
They just showed up and I said, help your mom.
Child labor.
I feel like you're side.
That's a great point. Child labor. What time of day was it that you were having your children do this work?
It was the end of the day.
End of the day. Where children are, that age aren't allowed to work.
Jeez.
What is this? Tell, you know, forget him. Are you okay? What's life like in this marriage?
It's hard.
So he gets a great wife, a great woman, a great mother, maybe the best cook I know, and a trophy wife to boot. And you get what?
I have to think about it.
I find in favor of the wife.
Your Honor, I'm going to withdraw my case.
Well, you can withdraw it in Attica. Take him away.
What, you sent me to prison?
Hey, baby, so what are you doing later?
No.
Wife court that was with the judge, Jack Helmut.
That was questionable material. Please subscribe to this podcast. Visit qmpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to a very entertaining, delightfully infrequent newsletter. Questionable material is produced by Brian Sack and Jack Helmuth. Wife Court Bed Music by Paul Peacock.